Hey, this is Red Band from Death Squad, and I want to thank everyone from Portland, Oregon. We were there at the Helium Comedy Club, and I want to thank all the listeners that I met. You guys are great, and I love doing this for you guys, and we all want to thank you so much for listening. This is Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, and if you want to download all the episodes and everything, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for Death Squad in the iTunes store and hit subscribe. The more subscribers we get, the better the show becomes, because then if we are, like, you know, number 10 on iTunes, we can get some pretty sweet guests on here. And, you know, we're all aiming for Lindsay Lohan one day. That's our goal here at the Death Squad Studios. So hopefully you can make our dream come true. If you can get Lindsay Lohan, we would... I'm just kidding. All right. So anyways, here's Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. Don't forget to check out deathsquad.tv for all the video components to all these different podcasts. Also, you can see all the links to all the guests, and you could also donate. Thanks for donating, guys. Here we go.
All right. Turn this down. Oh, there we go. We need to start with the choruses. Okay, right. This long intro music. We're like, what song is this? And then we figure out what it is. You're the perfect drug, but that's a metaphor for a chick, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Skeptic Tank, or Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, or the Skeptic Tank with Ari Shaffir, or just the Skeptic Tank. This is whatever episode it is, and we are here with today with Mr. Mac Lindsay.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about drug addiction.
Yeah.
Because Mac, for a long time, was a degenerate drug user.
Big time drug addict.
It
was a real party.
How long were you a complete addict for?
I'd say probably from the time I was... I'd say I became like a real addict around when I was 15.
15?
Yeah, I was young.
Oh, so when I met you, you were already heavy into that shit.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, bouts of like getting sober and then getting fucked up again. And I would say that when you met me, I was on drugs, though, yeah.
Okay.
It's telling you I was going to stab you. I think there was one point yeah. I told you I was going to stab you.
Ryan O'Neill picked up his bag, and he was like, hey, whose bag is this? And you were like, you touch my bag again, I'll stick you.
Yeah, I'll stick you.
And we all just laughed. We were all a little bit worried. We were also like, that's too silly not to laugh at.
I wasn't sticking anybody.
Yeah, stick you. Like, what? Dude, we're all we're comedians, bro. You don't need to take it to that level. Use the lingo. Yeah. What were you on? What have you done? Like, everything?
I would say I've done almost everything. I never used needles. I've taken heroin in the fact that, like, I've eaten it, you know.
Okay.
I didn't want to use needles.
Have you smoked heroin?
Yeah, I have smoked heroin.
Why don't you want to use needles?
I don't know, man. It was weird. I was around a lot of needles. I was around a lot of people who use needles. I never wanted to do it, though. You know, I don't know. It's weird because, like, you know, I could be smoking crack and then be like, I'm not gonna be some dirty needle user. You know what I mean?
Everyone does that. You know what I mean? Everyone sets a line themselves.
I'm not filthy.
That just seems more serious, you know, once you hit needles.
It is a big thing. It's a good way to get AIDS or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's a good way to get AIDS.
Is that even a real thing? Do people really still get AIDS off needles?
Yeah,
or is that not really?
Absolutely. People contract HIV that way.
Like, how often does it happen, the people in your circle?
I didn't, in my circle, I didn't know anybody that actually contracted HIV that way.
Okay.
I mean, it can happen, but the people that I knew who used needles, I mean, almost all of them got hepatitis C.
That's the one you get from tattoos?
Well, if you're getting tattooed by a dirty needle,
Or Pamela Anderson.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, it's, you can get hep C from tattoos, but I mean...
You get hep C from fucking?
They don't, that's debatable.
Oh.
It's debatable. But, you know,
that means no to the guy who wants to fuck someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That means let's just go for it. So you did everything. You wouldn't... Okay. Wow. So you... When did you start at 15? What did you start drugs with at 15?
I started with weed, really.
The gateway drug.
I mean, well, you could say cigarettes are... I mean, I was 9, I smoked my first cigarette. I took it from my grandfather.
9?
Yeah, I was 9.
9?
Yeah, he... 9. And my grandfather smoked cigarettes, and I was like, I'm going to be like my grandfather or whatever. And I stole one of his packs. He smoked like 3 or 4 packs a day.
Wow. And, never gotten up that high.
And, you know, okay. Yeah, is this better? All right, good. There you go. That's what you get. So I started smoking. I'd say that, that when I was around 13, I tried marijuana, but by the time I was 15, I left home when I was 14.
Oh yeah, you had a deadbeat dad or something?
No, dude. My dad and I had problems. He wasn't a deadbeat. It's just like very uncommunicative, and you know, he drank a lot after work, and so if it wasn't, he'd just go home and watch football. And there was just no, it was real, like, quiet and cold in my household, and I was constantly grounded and constantly in trouble. I wasn't someone, you know, this kid was like, my parents beat me, so I ran away from home. It's like, you know, I lived in suburbia with my dad, and I was tired of being grounded, and I was like, it looks like a lot more fun not to have parents.
Yeah.
You know, which is what I did. I mean,
but then you realize, oh, they pay for everything.
But it didn't matter because it was high. I didn't care.
Right.
I mean, I was able to... I mean, you're 14 years old. It's not hard to hustle food out of people. I mean, not everybody's a monster. You know, I'd be like, I'm hungry. You'd be like, okay, here's a kid. I'll feed him, you know?
Oh.
So, I mean...
That's how I was for shoplifting.
I mean, my home wasn't the happiest place. My father and I have, like, a good relationship now. But when I was growing up, it was not a happy, like, fun environment. I was always in trouble. I was always arguing with people. And... it was just miserable, you know, so I left and I went and stayed out in this, like, neighborhood in Austin, Texas, and there was just a lot of drugs out there, and so I started doing harder drugs. I ate a bunch of LSD.
What did you start with? You started with acid?
Yeah, I took acid in high school for the first time.
And you loved it?
I loved it. The second time I didn't because I had a seizure. I had some bad acid.
Wow.
Really?
I woke up in the middle of science class and
what?
Paramedics.
Wait. You did it in high school? You did acid?
Yeah. That's where you do it. You party in high school.
During
that's
school?
That's crazy.
All the time.
Wow.
But I was like, my friend came to me and he's like, dude, take this acid. I was like, okay, so cool.
You know, dude, take this acid. Dude, okay.
I was like, yeah, he's like, dude, take this acid. I was like, whatever, man, fine. So I'm like in gym class and my coach's head is just like getting bigger. It's like breathing and he's like, you guys got to go out and run the track. And I'm like, oh my God, man, this is insane. Just start laughing at him, you know? And I mean, I was always in trouble anyway. So it's like, if I'm like acting, they always thought I was on drugs, even though I, at times when I wasn't. So I could pretty much, you know, it was just kind of like a thing I could do in school without actually running into trouble. Like, I think he's on drugs. It was like a given. This kid is on drugs.
He's on drugs, yeah. So that's why he's acting weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wonder if people, they don't, it's not your first thought, unless somebody's like cracked out or something, like, you know, sweating on the sidewalk. It's like, your first thought is not they're on drugs. It's like, oh, what? Why are you acting weird?
Yeah. You
or
know.
They're just being strange today.
And like, I took acid again, though, in school, because that became, I guess, well, you take acid in school, that's what you do, right? When you go to school, you take acid.
No, I never did
that. And I did a lot of acid.
Never even had booze in school.
Dude, I always took it in school. So I took acid one time, and I was also on lithium, because my family had stuck me in a bunch of hospitals, so I was on a bunch of, like, psychotropic drugs or whatever, and you don't mix acid with lithium.
Why? Because that gives you a seizure.
Because it gives you a seizure. Like,
you know? What was the lithium for? What was the...
I was supposed to have been bipolar. Yeah. But, you know, because when I was... okay, when I was 12, my family put me in this, like... it was like a mental hospital /... I don't know what it was. A mental hospital. They locked me up in a mental hospital. And I had to go see a bunch of psychiatrists and psychologists and do a bunch of, like, bubble sheet scans, you know, like, Scantron stuff for personality disorders and physical therapy, emotional therapy, group therapy, act-out therapy, all this stuff. And they came to the conclusion that, you know, I was bipolar. Now, I played that up because it's like, I'm like, okay, it's cool to be crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
You're in junior high. It's like, I'm fucking crazy.
Oh, yeah. Whoa, especially, you know? Back then when it was like something really different.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay. So it was just being prescribed a little bit.
Yeah. It was like becoming a fad.
Yeah.
You know, all the parents were sending their kids to this shit. We had a contract in our house. So I started taking this lithium and I would take it with, I'd either take lithium or take Depakote, whichever they would like go back and forth when they were checking my levels. And I took acid and I was like, I'd never had it happen before, and I was like, started shaking, like my body was like,
wow,
like doing like this shake thing, and wow, you know, the sounds were all amplified, and like, you know, my vision was kind of, it sounded like someone was talking through like a straw. It's hard to explain, like everyone was talking to me through like this, kind of like that. And I would start it, and we would go out. We had like a smoking section at my high school, which is really weird. Like, there was a place where all the kids would go and they would smoke.
That's weird.
Yeah. It's not, is that normal for
high
schools?
Yeah, it's normal. Behind the bleachers or something like that.
So we're all sitting out there and there's like this umbrella. It's like hot outside. It's in Texas. And there's this umbrella and there's this bumblebee that's like buzzing and thumping up against the inside of the umbrella. And it's driving me crazy. I mean, driving me insane, you know, and everybody would fuck with everybody on acid. So like, you know, that smoking section was next to the Future Farmers of America. So there's like all these lambs and like sheep, and everybody's like, Mac, you know, I'm like, what the fuck's going on? You know, and they're just like fucking with me. And I'm like, and I asked my friend, I'm like, am I shaking? He's like, yeah, what the fuck's wrong with you? And like, apparently my eyes, my pupils were just complete, like black holes in my face, you know, like it was just dilated. And lunch was over, and I go to math, and I'm sitting there, and I kept, like, it just shaking just got worse and worse. And then the next period was, like, it was science. So I was sitting in science class, and, you know, we had, like, the black countertops and everything like that. And I'm looking through the microscope at some amoeba or some weird shit like that, you know. And all of a sudden, like, I hear a bell go boom, and it sounds like someone's dropping a best way to it sounds like someone's dropping a quarter, like the sound, if a quarter could make a school bell sound, like flipping through like a glass of water. And that's the best way I can describe it. And that's the last thing I remember. My head just apparently just like slammed on the,
the desk.
On the desk. And I woke up, apparently like I just had like puke coming out of my mouth.
Oh.
And like, I was just like sitting there like convulsing on the floor of the science room. I wake up, paramedics are there. They've got the mask on me. They're like, what'd you take? I was like, I didn't take anything, you know, like trying to.
And they're just like, we just want to help you. Just, yeah, we don't care. Yeah. We're not the cops. Just tell us what you took.
I was like, don't tell my dad. You know, and this is like right before I guess I'd done acid before 15? I left home, because I was worried about my father at that point. So yeah, no, at that point I was 14, because I hadn't left home yet.
That's a freshman in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were all, like, you know, all the people I hung out with were all drug addicts and stuff. And So
was it just a thing, like, somebody gave you some, you're like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I want to do acid. I like tripping, you know? And then, later, after I ran away from home, I continued to do acid and take my meds, because I was like, I can't stop taking my meds, you know, but I'm not going to stop topping acid either. So I had another seizure.
Wow.
This is the last time I ever did acid. And this, I was not at home at this point. Of course, I'm still a minor, so when I went to the hospital, they had to call
your parents,
my father. But when he picked me up, I told him just to like drop me off at some coffee shop. I don't remember exactly, but I do remember we were walking, and at that point, I completely blacked out. And from what I understand, all my friends who were hanging out with me, it was like I kept running into stuff, and like, I was like, stop. I would stop and like freeze up. And then we were walking behind this bank. It was nighttime, and we were like walking behind this bank, and apparently I fell out there. Now, the weird thing is I'm not really, I don't know if there's a God. I don't know if there's a hereafter or anything like that, but I swear I left my body that night.
You left your body and watched?
Because everything up until this point I had blacked out. Mm-hmm. The whole trip was blacked out. But I was, all of a sudden I came to, and it was like a white noise, and I'm looking, and there's an ambulance, and there's like a crowd of, like a semicircle of people, and all I can hear is this white noise, and behind me, it's like this real high-pitched voice, but it's not, it's like, I can communicate with it, but it's not English or any language really that I know of, but I know what's being asked of me, and it's saying, you want to go to hospital or home, right? And I was just like, I don't know. And all of a sudden, it's like, you're going to hospital. And I lift up my consciousness or whatever this is, and then all of a sudden I'm hovering above my body.
So you're watching your body.
I'm watching my body on the ground while these paramedics are on top of me, like doing whatever they're doing. And I float down, like my face going towards my face. And the minute it hits, I open my eyes and I'm looking up, and there's paramedics. And I kicked a cop. I started swinging on these paramedics and screaming. And apparently I'd stopped breathing for 3 minutes.
Wow. And, that's so long not to breathe.
Yeah, I know. I got brain damage. No, I don't bring up. I hope I don't. But I'd stopped breathing for like 3 minutes, and they had to strap me to a gurney because I was being extremely combative. And then they took me to the hospital. And that's the last time I ever did acid.
God, I would hate, if I was a paramedic, I would hate drug addicts. Ugh. They fight and punch us for no reason.
Yeah, they're the majority of people that, when I worked in the emergency room, that's the majority of people that come in there.
Drug.
Oh, yeah. People are always ODing, like, you know.
And so then people just started giving you harder drugs, or you start finding it.
Yeah, around that time, I think I tried coke. And the thing is, I had a friend who was like a fairly, I mean, for being a young kid, I mean, we were kids at that point. When you're that young, you don't really think like, hey, we're kids. But you look at it now, like, Jesus, there was a fucking child, you know? And my friend was a fairly, like, successful drug dealer, like, being that young. Like, he made good money. Like,
he was your age?
Yeah, he was my age. And so he was dealing a lot of drugs, like, to adults and stuff. And
did you ever get arrested?
Yes, he's been arrested a number of times. He spent most of his life in and out of prison.
Wow. Did you ever get arrested?
Yes, I've been arrested a number of times.
What'd you get arrested for?
Well, oddly enough, like, I've been arrested for things like park curfew, like really stupid things. You know, like, I've been arrested for drugs one time. I have been in a cop car with drugs many times. But I always kept it in my shoe, so the minute they put me in the back of their cop car, I slip off my shoe, kick it under the seat, put my shoe back on. So I never got found with any drugs on me. I always dumped them in the cop car.
Into the cop car?
Underneath their seat.
What if they get pulled over and arrested?
They don't search you before they put you in there?
They can't search your shoe until they get you into the station. At least at that point, that was the law. Yeah. In Texas. So I kept everything in my shoe, no matter what it was.
So great how once people know the laws, they just start abusing the laws.
And he's like, I've been in a bunch of cop cars, and I've had a bunch of times where I've like had drugs on me, and I was just like, now the cop has it, I don't.
Wow. Was any part of you like, fuck, I want those drugs back?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of times.
Yeah?
Yeah. But I mean, I was also thankful not to be arrested for drugs. I was arrested for drugs once, and that was like later on in life in my
20s. What drugs?
Mushrooms. I was arrested for a mushroom cap. Wow. A cap.
A cap?
A cap?
What does a cap mean? I'd been eating out of this bag for like a week, man. A cap in Texas is a felony.
Yeah, did you?
It's a felony.
Did you get time for that, or did they?
I got put on a program that's a lot like the Impact program out here. I think it's called Impact, where it's like, you know, it's like you get a chance to go through a drug program and, you know, get, you know, go through a sobriety thing, which I didn't want to be sober at that point. I don't, you know, but I didn't want to go to jail either. You know, I think jail is one of the filthiest places on the planet.
So you just go through the program and say, fuck it, I'll go through it, and then I'll start drugging again.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
How long was the program?
The program's a year long. I spent two in it though.
2 years?
Yeah.
What now, does that mean every day, all day, or is that just you have to report twice a week?
I was busy with it about 3 days a week, and I had to go to court at least once a month. But they had this one point where I was like, I was getting frustrated because I had been sober, I was pissing clean the entire time, but I didn't have the money to pay them what they wanted. So
pay who what they wanted?
The courts. Okay. You have to pay, you know, to me, which was a lot of money. I don't remember. It's in like the multiple thousands.
Yeah.
And I couldn't pay them on time, so they just kept me in there, you know, and I finally started getting frustrated, and every time I would miss, if I would miss a piss test, I knew I was sober, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I miss a piss test, the judge would just keep throwing me in Del Valle, which was, you know, it's prison. They'd make me spend weekends in the prison, so I did that, like, every other weekend for, you know, probably about 6 months. I kept going into this, like, prison and have to stay there over...
Did you get beaten up in prison?
No. I did get in fights when I went to Harris County, though, in Houston at one point. I spent like 2 weeks in there for misconduct with a firearm, which was a pellet gun. It sounds a lot worse than it was. I was vandalizing shit. And
misconduct.
Yeah, they're like misconduct with a firearm. So, but
it
I
sounds
did,
so harsh.
I did have to. Yeah, it was a pellet gun, and I had to fight when I was in Houston. But yeah, I mean, I've been to jail a bunch. I hate jail. I don't like it. I'm not.
Yeah, you don't want to go back, but you don't want to stop doing drugs either.
Yeah, I didn't, when I got for that misconduct, I was put on probation for about a year also. So I've been on.
How'd you get caught so much? Because, I mean.
I'm a bad criminal, dude.
I should have been caught many times because I grew up the same, kind of the same, where I just tripped on acid all the time. I had shrooms all the time and weed in Ohio. I never got caught, though, doing that crap. Like, I should have been, but...
I'm a cop magnet, dude. I've got a loud mouth.
He's got a ton of tattoos. He looks like a degenerate. Yeah.
Did you do, like, a lot of, like, public drug use? Like you'd go to the mall?
I was homeless.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's probably why, then.
I mean, I spent a lot of time outside doing drugs. I mean...
Oh, yeah. You don't have to do it in your bedroom where you can just, like, close the door and no one will bother
you. I just have this thing. I'm just, like, I attract police officers when I'm fucked up. Like, I just am a bad person to hang out with.
So you started doing everything at some point.
I did everything, and then the real drug that really got me was meth. Like,
did you lose me to meth?
Yeah, I lost me to meth. I lost a lot.
What happened to you on meth? First of all, what's the trip like?
Oh, it's badass. It's one of the best. Like,
okay, so you take the meth, ground up, you eat it, or you snort it?
You put the meth in your face.
Yeah, I've never really
you got meth. You know, you got your weed grinders. We got meth grinders.
And, you do.
No, it comes in like a, it looks like a piece of clear glass. It looks like a piece of like clear candy.
And you smash it?
Yeah, you smash it slowly. You don't, because it bounces. It's like very like, it'll bounce if you,
what do you mean?
You don't want to lose it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, you take a rock, if you throw it on a table, if it's good glass, it'll just bounce off the table.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
It's like a Mexican jumping bean?
Yeah, it's just like a Mexican jumping bean. Exactly. Wow. No, and so, you know, you smash it up and you can smoke it, you can snort it, you can shoot it, whatever.
How much do you have to smash it up before you can snort it? Because it seems like those would be big pieces.
No, like a powder form?
Yeah, you crush it like powder. You take like you'll put like, say you take a chunk, you put it on the table, you take, I usually use like a license because it's flat and there's no creases that are going to take away the good stuff.
Yeah.
Take it away from you. So you smash it until it becomes kind of a powder form. You know, like Coke, you can chop it up with a razor or whatever, you know, but with meth, it's like if you do it with a razor, it's going to start shooting.
Once you cut it, yeah.
And so, you know, you sort of like flatten it out, you know, until it becomes sort of like a little powder thing. And then you just sort of scoop it into a line and snort it, you know.
Wow. Okay. And then how long after you snort it does it kick
immediately.
In?
Immediately.
Right away.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, whoa.
It's like going to outer space immediately.
Explain. What do you mean? Do you feel powerful? Do you feel...
Feel unstoppable.
Do you lose sense of reality or what's around you?
Like acid you or lose. You lose... At least I lost a sense of the limits of reality. I mean, I remember riding around with my uncle because they used to do a lot of speed too. And I remember asking him, going, why do you, and I was like, right before I tried meth, I remember asking him, like, why do you do speed? And he's like, well, it makes you feel like a god.
Does your uncle?
Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, this guy, dude.
Speed is different from meth.
Well, but yeah, but the crank, speed, meth, I mean.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, meth is a certain type of methamphetamine. It's a type of amphetamine, but I mean, they were doing meth too. When I say speed, when I'm talking about speed or crank or meth, I mean all as one drug.
Okay.
Crystal meth.
Okay.
You know, and
so it's like you would be able to think I can beat that guy up when you wouldn't be able to, but you wouldn't be saying I could shoot lasers out of my eyes at him.
No, yeah. Okay. It wasn't like I can fly, you know, it wasn't like that. It was like anything within the realm of
stuff you could possibly do,
I'm going to do it. Better than anyone.
Really?
Yeah, and I was able to keep that up until after being awake for like a week, and then I'd be like, oh my god, there are shadow people chasing me around the apartment. You know, I'm being hunted by goblins and shit like that, you know.
Really?
Then
so you start getting super paranoid.
Yeah, yeah, then I lose sense of reality. Like later on, it's like, I mean, dude, I've literally thought, I thought my family was in the mafia. They wanted to have me killed. I mean, I was like,
oh, really?
I would be like walking down the street and I'd be like, they're following me. I grab a payphone to make them think the people that weren't following me, to make the people think that I thought were following me, that I was calling the police and I was on. I mean,
and everyone,
this went on for months. I mean, it would just go on constantly.
And all anybody saw was, oh, Max using a payphone.
Yeah. Or I'd see people, I'd be in the middle of a conversation. Yeah. Or I'd be in the middle of a conversation and be like, do you want to kill me? And they'd be like, what? Do we want to kill you?
My next door neighbor maybe this is it. Maybe it's meth or something, but he started seeing red people that were out to give him harm.
Sounds like meth.
Yeah. I mean, that's a psychosis. It's really not red people in particular, but you know, paranoia, like visual hallucination, auditory hallucinations, which is when that started happening, that was the weirdest. I've never had anything like that.
You can't trust your brain.
What's that?
And you can't trust your brain.
No, you can't trust anything.
You're like, I heard it. Don't tell me what I heard. I heard it. You're you didn't. Your brain's lying.
Was it like your inner thoughts that you already have, but then they were just amplified?
No. It was like I would hear like organ noises or like like just these loud sounds coming out, or sometimes like whispers. You know how you see in like movies where it's like, you're like, can you do that with your thing? But you know what I mean? Where it makes like, that kind of thing where it's like whispers and like...
Could you make them out, or is it just whispers?
No, not all the time.
Have you ever tried to sleep with one of those voices?
You can't sleep when you're on that shit, dude. You can't. Like, that's the last thing you can do is sleep.
Yeah, talk about how you met Stanhope.
Oh, okay. So this was after I had actually quit speed or meth and all hard drugs for a good 4 years because but then I had gone back from L.A. to Austin and I started smoking it again.
Wait, when was this? Recently?
No, this wasn't recently. This was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's time
this
was, like, since I knew you.
Yeah, this is like 5 years ago. So I went back home and I was like looking for weed because I was like, I was just doing organic. So I was only eating mushrooms and only smoking weed and
just stuff that grows naturally.
Yeah, that was it. That was all I was into. And the weirdest thing is I went to my friend whose dad was like one of the head cops for Houston Police Department. And I went upstairs trying to get some weed from him because we smoked weed. And I was like, hey, man, I was like, you got any weed? He's like, no, but I have this. And he pulls out a light bulb.
A light bulb?
Yeah. You know, you smoke speed out of a light bulb. And
a broken light bulb. Yeah. Sorry.
Wow. A broken light bulb.
So is any part of you like, that's a good idea?
Dude, it was so light bulb just went off. Was so automatic. I didn't even think about it. I was like, okay, and just, and then the minute that happened, it was like, I never stopped.
I'm an addict again. Right away.
It was insane, dude. I mean, I was making like these giant plans for like comedy, and I'm going to just like these business plans. And like, meanwhile, I'm living in my mom's upper room in her fucking house, you know? So one of the shows we were putting together, Stanhope was coming down, and, you know, I'd been up for a long time, like weeks at this point.
What do you mean like weeks? No sleep?
I mean, an hour nap. Okay. I'll take an hour nap today, but 3 weeks of one day with an hour nap.
Wow.
I mean, it just like, I was just fucking.
Yeah. If I go 2 days with like 5 hours, I'm a zombie.
Oh, but I was like, you know, I'll drink Pedialyte or I'll remain hydrated. Cause that's a big problem. Like the minute that you become super dehydrated on that shit, that's when you just can't. Cause you're not eating.
Right.
You know what I
mean? Oh, you have no appetite.
No, I'm not really eating. I can barely eat. And I'm making sure I'm kind of hydrated, but I've been up for a long time. We go to pick Stanhope up. And I'm thinking, oh, Stanhope's fucking rock and roll comic, blah, 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 blah. He loves meth heads, right? He loves people on meth. So we pick him up from the airport, and I'm just like, what's up, dude? You know, just gacked out of my mind. And he gets in the car, and I don't think anything of it, you know? And, like, we're driving around, and the show comes around, and we have, like, these burlesque girls, and, like, it's at, like, this club. It's not a comedy club. It's, like, a punk bar or whatever. A lot of people are there. I brought a bunch of my friends over here, like these big, like one guy's name is Poncho. He's got like a big, you know, big fat Mexican drug dealer.
Sounds like a Poncho.
I brought a whole crew of these guys with me to hang out. You know, I was like, these guys are my friends. They love comedy. And they are my friends. Like I grew up with them, but they're not like, they're scary looking dudes. Like they're frightening, you know? And so I'm like running around this thing and there's like these burlesque dancers and I'm like trying to, saying all these like, you know, things to him, telling him to do all types of like sexual favors for me and like smoking speed in the back and
telling who to do sexual
these favors. Burlesque girls. I'm like like spanking them and they're there to work. You know what I mean? I'm like, you're a piece of fucking meat. Come here. You know, just like being crude, like really crude.
And because on the meth, you thought them and you're like, oh, I can definitely fuck them.
Oh, I think I can do anything. Yeah. I'm a god. I can say whatever I want. I'm high and there's nothing like.
Did you think you were funnier than you were?
I don't even know if I thought I was funny.
Okay. Were you making jokes like this would be a good joke?
No.
And no, you weren't. Okay.
No. And I was like, Stanhope, come back here, man. Smoke some speed. He's like, that's all right, dude. I don't need any meth. That's fine. I was like, no, dude, it's fucking, you know, so.
You're like, no, dude, you're wrong.
You're wrong. You need it. You have no idea how great this is right now, you know? And so then I'm like featuring for him, right? And I go up before him and I just ruin the fucking show. I mean, because I spend probably 30 minutes talking about how I'm high on speed. And then I do like one bit about being molested by my stepbrother and I reenact it, you know, to where it's like, people are just like, this isn't comedy, you know, like this is not fucking funny.
I would love to have seen this.
You know,
were you aware of the crowd's response?
Yeah, I didn't care. I was like, dude, this is awesome. Fuck you. I'm high.
A lot of people who do drug shit or like anti-establishment stuff on stage, if the crowd's not laughing, they're like, you guys are fucking idiots. You're the man.
But see, I didn't think it like that. I was just like, didn't care. I was like, I was like, I'm not expecting you to like me and I'm not expecting to like you. And I was just like, you know, super duper fucked up, you know? And then Stanhope comes up and he spends like the first 15 minutes of his set like, trying to like bring the room back together, you know? And he's like, that's why you don't do meth and this, that, and the other. And I didn't think anything about it. And apparently, like, he was going to have me do on the Unbookables tour with him. And I was going to do some stuff with him. And I have a lot of respect for him as, like, a comic, you know?
Yeah.
But that completely, like, just cut it off right there. You know, he's like, wow. And I saw him at South by Southwest. I didn't know exactly how he felt. I thought he was just like, fuck that guy.
This year you saw him at South by Southwest.
Yeah, 5 years later. And he was like, yeah, you know, honestly, he's like, I just didn't want to be around you. He's like, I was afraid of you. I was afraid of what you were going to do. You picked me up at the airport and I thought you were going to just start breaking stuff. And
that's the thing too. It's like people, were you aware when you're drugged out on whatever it is, meth or speed or coke or anything, are you aware of what people, how they're looking at you?
No.
Not really, no. I don't think it matters so much because I'm more trying to feel good, you know, like right. My mind's somewhere else. Like I don't think until I get paranoid, I start thinking about how people are looking at me, and then it's like, it's an irrational take on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like someone may be like, this guy's being a dick and I'm going to take it as like, you're going to have me arrested. Like that kind of thing, you know?
Or you're just jealous and fucking this girl. Nothing to do with that. I remember David Taylor once, you met us at some Asian food place in Los Feliz. You were just walking by at that time and we were just about to order or something like that. And you weren't going to eat with us, but we had beer in our back seat from the David Taylor catastrophe in David's back seat. And so you're like, oh, I'd love some beer. Let me have some. And David's like, okay, it's just shitty, warm, natty light or something. And David's like, my car is like 2 blocks away. It's in the back seat. And you were like, okay, cool. Let me. And I was like, just give him the keys, David. Let him get, and then I'll give back the keys. He goes, no, I'll go with him. And I was like, well, we're about to order. Just give Mac the keys. Let him get his fucking beers and then he'll return the keys. And he's like, I'll go with him. And then later he goes, it's not even his fault. He's a drug addict. Yep. But you can't trust him with your stuff.
Yeah, man. I was seriously had a lot of. I mean, Dan Bylak chased me down the street with a baseball bat.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't leave him alone.
I was in the Hollywood Hills. I went and slept on his front door, knocking on his door in the morning.
Banging. His fiance was there trying to sleep.
I went to his neighbor who I met one time and was like, let's fuck. Like, I just like walked up to her house at 2 a.m.
Well, how'd she react to that?
She was like, no, not tonight. And like, I mean, I was just like.
You're like, I like the move, but not right now.
Oh. No, dude. It was just like, I was just out of my mind. And then I woke up one morning and Dan Bylak. You know, he's like talking real fast and stuff, like chasing me down the street, down Kirkwood with fucking a baseball bat.
That's insane.
It's not the first time he's chased anyone with a baseball bat. Bylak loves that baseball bat.
Is it a metal one or a wood one?
I think it's a metal one. I can't remember. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's metal.
You could definitely hit your head further with a metal bat than with a wood bat, but it doesn't really matter. Either way, it's going to hurt. So you weren't aware of how people, but would you trust yourself? Like, looking back now at that guy who did a bunch of drugs, would you trust yourself not to victimize your friends? Or would you just be like, oh, here's $100. I can use that for this. I'll just take it.
What do you mean? Like, if I'm looking at myself back then?
Yeah.
And if I were to start doing drugs again? Yeah. Or?
Like, would you say, oh, that old you would do things that this new you would not be proud of in order to get the drugs?
Absolutely.
Like, what would you do? Who would you steal from?
I'd steal from my own mother.
Did you steal from your own mother?
Yes.
But, like, steal, like, I'm taking $10 to get a pizza? Or, like, steal legit money?
Well, I mean, if I got desperate enough, I would do whatever I had to do. I never really, like, took, like, $10 from my mom or, like, $100 from my mom. But, you know, I would manipulate people as much as I could to get what I want. You know what I mean?
Addicts are good at that.
I mean, it doesn't have to be like blatant, like, I robbed a VCR for some crack. You know, it's like.
So you didn't suck dick for crack.
I've told my mom I need money or these people are going to kill me, you know, that kind
of
thing.
I went to Al-Anon once.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
A couple of times. It was actually really interesting. It was really interesting. It was just like, Al-Anon is pretty much for friends or family of people with addiction problems. But one of the things they said was, do not get in the way of the catastrophe that is their lives.
Right.
Where it's like, if they're gonna kill me, it's like, uh-huh. And if I bail you out, there's gonna be another thing next. So you have to deal with this catastrophe.
Yeah, and my mom started going to Al-Anon. And that's like, things sort of changed at some point. Like, she left me in jail. That one time I got arrested.
Left you? That must have been tough.
Oh, dude. She came and saw me. She was all dressed up to go out partying with her girlfriend. She's like, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, she was like crying. And I, of course, was like, fuck, dude. Like, you know, sometimes I would do things, and then after the fact, it's like, I'm not a monster, but I mean, I'm like sick, you know, and I would see the stuff that I had done, like some of the damage I'd caused with my family. And
in
like,
times of sobriety or in
even when I was, even when I was fucked up, I mean, like when she left me in jail, it was like, you know, I was sitting there and it was for that pellet gun thing or whatever. Yeah. Of course, I'd been on coke when I was doing it. I was real fucked up. I was just driving around shooting people's stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and someone's like, there's a guy driving around here with, you know, a gun. And so they pulled me out of the car and, you know, they threw me on the ground, put guns on me and all that shit. And like, I'd been fighting. I'd gotten a fight the first night I got in there and I can't fight, dude. I hate fighting. I'm like, I'm just not coordinated. You know, I seize up whenever I'm being attacked, like physically, and I'm not good at it. But I mean, when I fought when I was in there because it's like I have to do this no matter what, you know. And the first night I'm up there, I'm like laying on a bunk bed, and You know, you go in there and it's like, new house. That's what they're yelling, you know.
Why are they yelling that?
Because it's like, I'm the new guy coming in the house. So they're saying new house. And it's like this double tier thing. It has a pod up top where the cops sit in and they watch everyone sleep. And it's like this double tier. And then you have, you know, the bathroom down there and everything. So I have to go upstairs and they give you a mattress and I put it down there and they give you a little bag of.
Is it carry your own mattress?
Yeah, it's not like a big mattress. It's not like a mattress in your house, dude. It's like a piece of flat.
Like a sleeping bag with some cushion in it or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're thinking, like, I'm carrying up a Posturepedic or a Tempur-Pedic up there or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? here's your water bed, your jailhouse water bed.
Use urine.
But
the closest thing I can relate to is I was staying at the Four Seasons in Seattle.
Lot like that one.
And I said my internet connection wasn't working right away. So they sent someone up and told me how to make it work.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Yeah.
But I was like sitting up there, dude, and this one guy, his name was Bayside. He had a tattoo of a money symbol on his face.
Because he's cash money.
Yeah. And what's weird is like,
what's up, Bayside?
Because I'd been running my mouth when they arrested me. The cops had me put in this thing called a gladiator tank in Harris County, which is like where violent offenders are waiting for trial to be processed and sent to like a state prison. Or
so it's just people who won't avoid fights.
It's people that's all they know how to do.
Right. So you're definitely going to, they're punishing you by putting you in with
them. Yeah. And they're like, you know, they sent me to literally the worst floor in Harris County. And when he told me they were doing that, then I got scared.
You're like, fuck.
I was like, I should have kept my mouth shut.
Black people.
Yeah. A lot of black people in there. Almost, I would think there was one other white guy there, but he was hiding behind the Bible. So no one fucked with him.
He had a Bible on him?
Oh, yeah. Like if you go to jail and you can quote the Bible real well, like most people that are in jail are afraid of religion.
Bad.
So they're like, we can't pick on him. Like, I mean, this guy was like, this white kid was so skinny, you know? And I was like, how do you avoid not getting fucked in the ass every night? Like, how do you? And it's just because he knew how to quote the Bible.
Was there any threat of that, of rapey stuff?
There was threat of that.
And it better
never happen. Not going to do it. I mean, it happens in hindsight, looking in county, all those guys are waiting on trial. They're not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do know one thing I've read up on prison rape. This is getting off subject, but they said that the wardens and cops would often say, if you're bad, we're going to transfer you to so-and-so place, where it's known as a rapey place, just as a threat to keep you in line.
I mean, these guys had threatened to rape me when I first got in there. So it's like, you know, when I first got in there, I laid down and Cash Money's over there. And he's like, man, what'd you do if someone took your shoes? I was like, and then, so I'm posed with this
thought. What would you do if someone took your shoes? Like, oh, is there a right answer here?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was like. the only thing I thought is like, because I've known a lot of people to go to jail, I've known a lot of people in prison, you know, and I was just like, okay, you can't get punked because it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, so you got to stand up yourself right away.
Yeah, and so then I just like became over. I was like, well, I don't know. What would you do if someone took your shoes? And I was like, I just said this to a guy with a tattoo of a money symbol on his fucking face.
What did he do?
And he's like, oh, we got a feisty white boy. We got a feisty white boy. And I was like,
oh, snap.
And that's when it started happening. You know, I could hear all the bunk beds like laughing and talking, be like, oh, we're going to fuck this boy up, blah, 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 you know. And it's pitch black, so I can't see half the people that I'm hearing. I just hear voices coming out of the dark at me.
Yeah.
And I've been up there literally 5 minutes.
Okay. Wow.
And all of a sudden, I see stars. This dude came up from the bottom tier and, like, clocked me. And I managed to grab his head, and I got him in a headlock. And I wailed on that dude's face harder than anybody
else. And no one else stepped in?
No, they pulled him off. They pulled me off of him. And then I just wasn't going to stop.
And then started beating you?
They left me alone. And a matter of fact, I got accolades the next day. But then the minute that happened, you think like, okay, no one's going to try to fuck with me anymore. Wrong. Now the next guy's like, well, if you fucked with him, you're going to fuck with me. And so like 2 weeks of this going on, I'm like, I'm in here for a pellet gun. Like I'm in here for a pellet gun, man.
Wow.
And literally,
but really it's you not taking responsibility for like, no, I was on coke.
Yeah. I was on coke shooting. I was vandalizing people's stuff and I was popping off at the cops and you know, I was being a spoiled brat, you know, and I'm pretty much getting, you know, what I deserve. And so I had a black eye and I went down and I'm sitting there talking to my mom and this dude next to me, she came to visit me. This is when she told me she got to take me out. I was like, they're going to rape me. Get me out of here. Help. You know what I mean? She's like, I can't do this shit anymore, Max. She's like, you got to change your life or, you know, I just can't keep putting myself in this situation. It's like, look what you're doing to me. Look what you're doing to yourself. Look what you're doing to the rest of your family, you know, like you gotta get it together, man.
And did you hate her at all for that? Did you think she was being unreasonable? And did she
at the time?
At the time, yeah, I was really angry. Okay. Very, very.
Clearly,
angry.
Now you're like you put her in a terrible position to have to make that your choice. Yeah.
And you know, so And after that, like the day I left, even there was like a circle of dudes waiting for me because all those guys are gonna do time. Like, I mean, those dudes are.
What about the guy you beat up? Did he want to come back and try to beat you up?
No, he wanted to talk to me. He wanted to be my friend.
Really?
Yeah, that's weird. It's how you make friends there. You beat them up.
Wow. Did you have any moral aversions to doing this? Like when I was smoking cigarettes, mm-hmm. if there was a child around me, mm-hmm. like a 7-8-year-old, I'd feel sort of bad. I'd put it behind my back a little bit as I passed by or mm-hmm. trying to breathe out when I was, because I knew a part of me was like, I don't want to influence. Young, no, did you have any moral aversion to it at all?
I did not care about that. You're like, at all.
It's fine. I'll do it where I do it.
I didn't care about anything but myself, dude.
Wow.
I didn't care about anybody, anything, anyone but myself.
And so when you stopped doing it, was because it was just ruining your life, or was it because you were still enjoying the drugs?
I was not enjoying it. Okay. I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't working, and I just couldn't seem to quit. I couldn't quit.
I've heard a lot of people quit pot for that. They're like, I was getting high every day and not getting high. It was like, what's the point? I'm not enjoying this.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, it wasn't working anymore, you know? I mean, I was still miserable, you know? I wasn't getting any relief, and I just couldn't do it anymore, man. It was just killing me. It was killing me, and I just, like, had burned every bridge. I mean,
But you didn't worry about what people thought of you? Or you did?
No. I mean, not so much. You mean, what do you mean, what respect?
Just in general society, what they thought of you.
No, like, not at that point.
I asked for questions on Twitter. Like, I usually ask for people's questions, and the overwhelming question... Like, probably 60% of what everybody asks is, did you suck dick for crack? Did you suck...
No.
And whether or not that's true, it's like, that's what people think of you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you must be sucking dick behind a dumpster in order to get your fix.
Yeah, no.
How did you react to that? That's how people thought of you.
I never really cared about that. You didn't care. I don't really look down on people who suck dick.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. It's like, I was just putting your mouth on something different.
I think everyone gets their drug lingo from New Jack City, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, they don't know. It's just
I'll
movies.
I'll suck your dick for crack.
Yeah, I mean, I never really, like, I mean, I've known a lot of people to do it, you know what I mean? There are gay street hustlers. I mean, that's how you make your money. I mean,
but they're already gay, or they're just fucking going for it?
Or some of them are gay. They just want drugs.
Sometimes,
dude,
I try to break down homosexuality. I'm like, what's the difference? There's such a stigma on it, but it's like, so you're putting your mouth on this instead of putting your mouth on something else.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's like, who cares, you know? And it is. It's a stigma. It's a cultural thing. It's like, people are like, oh my God, you sucked. It's like, clearly the only reason you find that super duper disgusting is because... I'm putting another man's cock in my mouth.
Yeah.
If I said I ate pussy for drugs,
it'd be fine.
I'd be like, all right, how many people eat pussy for all kinds of reasons?
Yeah,
you know,
girls,
I mean,
suck dick. Nobody really cares about that. Well, girls should, anyway.
Was meth your number one drug?
I'd say it was my favorite drug. And alcohol became like a real problem, like real quick after, because I stopped.
You can get it easy, too.
Yeah, you can get it easy. And then, like, the meth, like, I had that run after the Stanhope thing. I came back out here immediately. And I just was on this, like, run for a long time of just, like, constantly every day doing it. And I was staying in this Koreatown apartment that I ended up flooding because I don't know what I did. I just, like, left the sink on. It was a friend of a friend's apartment. And they had, like, thousands upon thousands of dollars of, like, rare comic books.
And you
just flooded their entire collection, dude. Just ruined it. Ruined it. Because I was putting barrettes in my hair at the time. I had, like, little barrettes and, like...
Sort of remember
and
that.
I would like sit. I would sit in front of the mirror and like I had for some reason. I guess I put a cooking pot inside the sink in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, I don't know what I was doing. Like maybe to stick my barrettes, like use the water out of that. I have no idea what I was doing that for.
Yeah,
I left the water on and left
and
for a couple days.
It clogged up the sink.
Yeah,
and it just kept running.
Yeah, the pot was sitting on top of the drain. And it just fucking ruined this guy's apartment.
And he was like, can my friend stay at your place? It's cool.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's
yeah.
Fine.
Oh, man. God. You know, and like, I went back there and like, I had spent this time like, where I started getting off of it because I was like, I can't, you know, and that's when like the auditory hallucinations and shadow people. And I was like, you know, underneath a coffee table for hours, just sitting there like curled up, just waiting for it to pass. Because like, if I don't die, if this doesn't kill me, I will never, ever touch this shit again.
That's when you cleaned up? That moment?
That's when I stopped meth.
Okay.
Because the minute I stopped meth, then I started like being like, well, I want to get high now. And nothing was working. So I went and just started drinking. I mean, I didn't...
Yeah, people have this like they have this idea of like everyone... And it's kind of a movie term where it's like you hit your lowest moment and you're like, well, I got to get clean.
Yeah.
But it's like there's like 1,000 low moments. And you keep going like, oh, fuck, I got to get clean. And then you don't. Because it's still fucking awesome to do drugs.
Right. Well, the thing is, like, I started drinking, you know, a lot. Like, I started drinking a whole lot. And or more, a lot for me. Like some people would be like, oh, I'm fucking drink a lot more than that. But like for me, it was a lot.
You were getting drunk.
I was getting destroyed.
Yeah.
Like annihilated.
Five wine coolers, six wine coolers.
I was drinking. I'd wake up. I was staying at Mike Favorman's place.
Yeah.
I'd wake up.
Immediately
in the,
boost.
I'd wake up in the morning. I'd go pick up two tall boys. I'd drink those. And then I'd have, I don't know if it's a pint or whatever it is of Jägermeister. And I carried it around with me warm. And I'd drink that.
Wow.
All that.
That's
and then
so
I'd,
fucking gross.
And then I'd drink warm Jäger.
I love it. I loved it. I thought it was the best thing in the world. I loved the way it tasted. Like, I liked it warm and hot and just.
Wow.
Straight.
Wow.
So then I would go and I'd get that. I'd go get some, and I'd by the end of the night I'd drink some more beer. So I mean that was like every day I was doing that, you know, and smoking as much weed as I could, and just, and then
how'd you have the money for that?
I was just like hustling it however I could.
Just
I was asking,
getting some.
Give me money.
Was that a big problem for you? It's like fuck. I wish I had more money.
Yeah, it's a of course it's a big. That's the problem.
Do you ever look at someone like Charlie Sheen? Let's just say for instance, and be like, yeah, with unlimited money, basically unlimited money, would you just still be using? Because that problem wouldn't be a problem.
No, I wouldn't. I don't know if he would. I wouldn't.
Okay.
Because dude, I was just like, I was. I would say it was morally, and I don't want to use spiritual, but. Something in me was just dead. I mean, it was just gone.
So you could
just
feel that.
I could just feel being empty and like having nothing to offer and just the kind of person I had become.
And you weren't happy
or
with
was.
It.
Not even became. Like a person I was allowing myself to be.
So you were aware of it.
Yeah.
You were aware of like, ew,
and
this
I could,
is me now.
Yeah, I'm disgusting. And I couldn't get fucked up enough to get relief from that, you know? And
right. You keep trying.
And I kept trying, and then I got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to stop drinking now because this is just, I'm clear. I'd gotten banned for life from the Comedy Store. I'd been sleeping there.
Banned for life from the Comedy Store.
Yeah,
means,
it means
you
like,
got to take a break.
but Dean was serious, dude. I mean, Dean, I've never seen him like, he yelled.
They're serious when they do it, but then like 6 months to a year later, they're like, oh, I don't really care about that thing anymore.
So I got banned from there. Nobody really went, you know. Bilac told me, like, go home, dude. Just go home. You need to just go home.
And
like,
people couldn't trust you.
Yeah, nobody could trust me. I burned every bridge I had, which I didn't have too many. And then, you know, I was sitting there going, okay, I just gotta stop drinking. And you know, that's when I like started to clean up right there.
Okay.
Because I was just like, I just sort of reached a point where I was like, my life is.
Yep. People have this idea of like interventions happening where it's like we're all gonna come like if you were my friend and you got heavy into drugs like I'd help you, but it's like no, you wouldn't, because before they got heavy into drugs or as they're getting it, they're gonna get more annoying.
Yeah.
They're gonna miss appointments with you, they're gonna fuck you over here or there until you're like, eh, I don't want to hang out with that guy anymore, and eventually you just stop hanging out with them, and then that's when you need the intervention, but all your friends are fucking alienated and don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah,
not because fuck you, you're a drug addict, but it's like
a
max annoying.
Yeah, a lot of those interventions I don't think. Well, first off, they're for television.
Well, no, not those, but I'm saying real life.
Yeah, I mean, intervention is like a person has to really reach. If they like really, really, really have a problem, I think they have to reach a point where it's like there is no other option. Like there's just no other option. You know, like I'm just so. It's either put a bullet in my head.
You ever think about killing yourself?
Oh, my. Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
What'd you try?
Well, I've eaten pills before.
To try to overdose?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was.
And what happened?
That was very rash, though. That was like. I was just angry, and I was like, fuck it, you know.
Doing
and
this.
And my friend had just blown his brains out, like a friend of mine. And
same reason?
I assume he was sad. I assume he was depressed. And
it wasn't Russian roulette.
Yeah, no, he wasn't being stupid. So I tried that, and I didn't go to the hospital for anything, but I was, like, puking blood every 15 minutes.
To try to cough the pills up?
Yeah, my body was rejecting it, you know. And then another time, this was before I started back on meth, right? This was the time before I went back to Austin. The time I was talking about where I walked into my friend's house.
Yeah.
I had been staying with Bilac at that time. And I was going home from the Comedy Store every night and getting on these like suicide websites. You know, they tell you how to do it. They tell you how to make it look like an accident.
It's so easy. When I talked to my therapist the first time, and the first one was like when I admitted to her that I had these feelings of you know, suicidal thoughts. And she's like, well, do you have a gun at home? And I was like, No, but the Hyatt Hotel is really close to me. I can just go jump off the top. Like, that's not the issue.
Yeah.
And she was like, what? You want to jump off the high? I'm like, no, I'm just saying if I want to do it, there's more ways than a gun. I'm not an idiot. Like, I can figure out how to kill myself.
I can leap in front of a bus.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, doesn't take much to do
it.
So I had just, like, been up there, like going over it and researching it. And I think at first it was just the idea, like, when when I was that sad or that miserable, like the idea of knowing I could kill myself was like having a key. It was like having a key out of prison. You know,
it's a relief.
It's like, yeah, I don't have to do it, but I can do it. Mm-hmm. And if I want to do it, I have that ability. Therefore, it was kind of like it gave me a sense of relief.
Yeah.
And so I was going up there and I was reading, you know, all these like suicide sites. And this was going on for like 6 months, I think. And then I went back to Austin. And around that time, right when I started doing meth, because it all kind of like correlates, it all sort of like coincides, like me doing the drugs.
There's tons of oxy in fucking Austin. There's tons Oxycontin. Of coke and crack. Yeah, Austin has those drug addicts put me to shame in LA. We're like, Jesus, you guys.
Man, there's a lot of
slow
drugs,
down. Right? Everyone's just casually chopping up pills and snorting them and just like, Christ.
Yeah.
I think pills are the most scariest of them all because, like, you run into these people that are just fucking pill poppers.
Yeah, and they're like, here.
Prescription pills. It's ridiculous.
Well,
it's like. I think that's even worse than doing, like, the meth and the cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, like, you can also tell yourself it's pharmaceutical, so it's, like, I'm not really. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody takes crack for, like, medicinal purposes. Yeah,
there's no medicinal crack. Medicinal crack.
I did meth once, and I remember it just being kind of like cocaine a little bit, but it seemed like it was cocaine, but with you didn't want to talk as much as cocaine does, but it felt more of like a power thing, definitely, like an invincible thing. Yeah. I didn't like it though. If it was easier to acquire, I might have gone down that route. But I ended up just doing the coke thing for a while, and that didn't last long either. Because I think at the end of the day, you start feeling that wearing out of your soul, and that happened to me. Luckily, fast. Like it was like a month, and then I was like, "All right, I'm done with this." Of just doing coke straight for a month. And I was like, "All right, I can't do this anymore," and I just stopped. Did you find the quitting part hard at all? I mean, did you go through the withdrawal symptoms?
When I quit.
Oh yeah, like when you went to jail, you couldn't get any, right?
Well, I mean, when I went to jail, I mean, that's like. It's not like in the movies, like, where you see, or some people maybe it is.
Shivering.
For me, it wasn't. Yeah, it's not like someone kicking heroin. I mean, you can die from kicking heroin, and you can die from delirium tremens from alcoholism. Like, alcohol and heroin.
Delirium tremens are my favorite beers.
Those are the two, those are the two.
It's delicious.
Those are the two withdrawals that can kill you. Withdrawing from meth, I mean.
Wait, what was it? It was heroin and what?
Alcohol.
Alcohol, okay.
But. You know, withdrawing from meth or whatever drugs I was on when I went to jail that time, it was like the nicotine overrides all of it. I mean, not being able to smoke a cigarette's what was driving me nuts more than anything else, you know.
You smoke a lot when you're
doing
drugs.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, it's weird, dude. I mean, the nicotine is like, I mean, I've quit cigarettes 3 times, and that is just, I'm still smoking. I haven't quit.
At my worst, I was smoking probably 12 or 13 cigarettes a day. I'm sure there's days I did more than that, but 12 or 13, half a pack to a little more at my worst. But when I did ecstasy, it would be an entire pack in 4 hours.
Yep.
It would just be like cigarettes, drugs, just make cigarettes better. Smoking pot, cigarettes after that, fucking awesome.
So how long have you been clean for right now?
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. That's
crazy. You're easier to hang out with now.
Thanks, man.
So, okay, here's another one, too. I have this thought that, well, I think a lot of people say that, they're just addictive personalities. So, have you replaced that addiction with other addictions?
Yeah.
Like what?
I'd say I'm more ambition, probably. I mean, I'd say that.
Pour yourself into comedy.
Comedy or, I get really extreme with a lot of things I become interested in. I mean, whether it's music. I think the difference between, like, not that you're asking what the difference is, but I think that, like, the difference between my addictive personality. That's another thing. I'm sort of like, I'm not like one of these people that's in like recovery that's like, you have a disease of the brain and, you know, like all this stuff about there being a disease in my brain and, you know, there's like a pathology that, you know, it's like some weird malady that can't be fixed, you know, except for some type of spiritual help. I don't know about all that, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that,
what did,
like,
you do, a program?
Yeah. Okay. I go to like a 12-step program. You but still I have, it? Yeah, but I still, I mean, I have like, I have critiques on it, you know. I'm critical of it. I'm not like just like, oh god, just cut out my brain and fill it with your, you know, fill it with your ideology or whatever. Because
I'm getting to talk about the program, I think, with Bobby Lee and Tebow next time or something. But everybody has to work for themselves.
The addictive personality thing is like, I don't think it's. I think that being addicted to, like, you know, work. I mean, if it, anything that gets in the way of, I think, me being happy and hurting other people. You know what I mean? I have to
and
take
not hurting other people.
Yeah, yeah. I have to take other people into consideration. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I have to, and I think that working the way I do it now is not nearly as destructive as like smoking speed. I'm not ruining like my family.
Right. Like if you pour yourself into writing, then it's like, yeah, guess what? I have 400 bits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. It's more good addictions. It's more productive. Yeah, I think that if you channel your energy towards, you know, other things, like, you know, it's like saying anything can be any tool can be a weapon or any weapon can be a tool. It's like just depending on what you do with it.
So at your worst, you just couldn't help yourself. Somebody give you drugs, and would there be even a thought of like, oh, I shouldn't? Like
towards the end, I mean, yeah, there's been times. Yeah, there's been times where I was like, I'm not supposed to be doing this now. I'm trying to quit, you know, and I just be like, fuck it, and just go do it, you know. And then after, it feels good for a minute, and then afterwards...
There's a scene in The Corner. You ever see The Corner? It's the, I guess, the prequel to the Wire. They did this like six-episode thing on HBO, and a lot of characters are the same. But there's this drug addict who overdoses on heroin, and then he wakes up in the hospital with all his like semi-homeless friends, you know, around him and stuff. And they tell him, like, look, if you do anymore, you're going to die. There's no... like, this has been ruining your brain, so there's nothing else. And then all this... some of my homeless friends come by and they give him a fix. And he's like, oh, yeah, start that thing up. And the one friend's like, are you crazy? They just told you you're going to die.
Yeah.
And he's like, what am I going to do? Not do it?
Yeah.
Like, that's not an option.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that at times. I mean, that's a show, you know, but at the same time, it does, like, for me, I've had moments where it's like that. It's like, I don't know how not to, like, not do this. Like, I mean, you put it in front of me. It's like someone comes and says, if you do this again, you're going to die. There have been times in my life where it's like, you might as well just hand me a death sentence. You might as well just put my head.
I'm not going to not do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how a lot of people feel with cigarettes and, like, lung cancer. They're like, you say that, but I'm not quitting. I don't fully believe in the lung cancer.
Right.
Because not everybody gets it.
So have you cut out alcohol, weed, and everything?
Yeah, I don't do anything, I mean, except for, of course, fucking cigarettes and coffee. I'd say those are my two, like, big chemical vices that I have.
Yeah, coffee, you're like,
I'm crazy about caffeine, and I'm crazy about nicotine. And, I mean, there's other things that I really enjoy that I guess some people would think they're addictions, but I don't really think they are.
That used to be the way you could tell a recovery person, was that they had Red Bulls.
Yeah.
But now Red Bull's everywhere. But I remember like a manager at the comedy store in La Jolla had one. I'm like, are you a sober alcoholic? Yeah. And he was like, yes. How did you know that?
Because you're drinking Red Bulls all day long.
Just need some fix.
Have you ever had any temptations in the last 5 years where it was pretty close, like I almost fucked up?
I'd say the other day is probably the closest I've gotten to even being like that. Well, see, now it's not like... I have this thing now where I'm like... it's not like, oh, I gotta go smoke me some crank, you know, I gotta go just pound this fucking like bottle of whatever back, you know. Now it's like, I just want to smoke a joint.
I love
weed.
That's how I am with cigarettes.
I love weed, but I know myself, and I have this thing, the minute that I get fucked up on one thing, the lines just blur. It's really weird. It's not like that for everybody, but for me it is. And it's like the past couple weeks I've been sitting there, because there's a great weed, they've made weed wonderful. It's like,
oh yeah, it's
like,
and it's everywhere at the comedy store,
you know, it's just weed everywhere. And then I was sitting there like thinking, man, I sure would like to have a drink, you know.
Yeah.
And I start getting thirsty and stuff, and it's
but you know, it's like it won't just be this one.
Yeah, I mean, so deep down I know that's what it is, you know.
So, you feel happy when you the next day when you're like, cool, I didn't do it.
No, see, it hasn't gotten that bad yet to where it's like, it's so dire that it's like, I'm like almost going to do it. And I wake up the next day like, ooh, that was a near miss. But the thought is in my head. You know, there is like a thought that goes through my head and the temptation arises. You know what I mean? Because there's nothing wrong with weed. There's nothing wrong with that. There's really nothing wrong with any drug.
It's just what it will do to you.
Yeah, the person who's doing it. Like, are you abusing it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's not because you're weak or strong or anything. It's nothing to do with that. It's just... I do a lot.
That's just how I do it. Yeah, I just like to do a lot of drugs, you know.
So. Have you, it doesn't seem like it, but have you ever thought of switching your addictions to, like, fitness? Like, I'm just going to fucking eat vitamins and work out like a motherfucker.
I've tried that. Yeah, and I was getting good at it, man. I was like, that's the problem, though. It's like, you don't have to be that disciplined to do, like, other drugs. Like, you have to be disciplined for fitness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you have to, I love running. I really like it. I don't like lifting weights or any of that shit.
That's what Argus said when he quit heroin and all that junk and coke and stuff. Yeah. He goes, I started running, and He goes, I couldn't run and smoke at the same time. I had to figure out which one I liked better, which one gave me the better high.
And see, that's what happens. It's just like you can't like pull out a run every, you know, like you're just like, oh, this is a good, like, you know, afternoon run. Or like,
yeah, you can't, you know, lean over, yeah, in the car, yeah, and just
pull
do
a
something.
Run out of a pack. You know what I mean? You've got to like put on your knee socks like Argus and run around Beverly Hill. You see him running, he's like, this dude's about to die. He's going to keel
shirt,
over,
knee
right?
Knee socks, yeah, and long shorts.
Wow. So great. An inch of knee,
and that's it.
You've actually seen this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it a lot. It's the best thing in the world.
I want to see it.
He jogs down Sunset.
Yeah.
Down that nice part of Sunset.
But I was running, man. I was running a lot, and I quit cigarettes last time. I quit cigarettes for a minute, just a minute, dude, just like 2 weeks, you know, which is nothing. But, you know, I had worked up to that. And just recently I started running again, you know. And the problem is I love smoking a cigarette after a run. It's like the best cigarette to have.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, right after you work out, cigarette sounds amazing.
For whenever people justify, like, I'll just have this one after that, it's either zero or you're a smoker.
Yep.
There's no in between. Yep. Because you're always about to, well, today I'll just have tomorrow.
Yeah, no,
cigarette.
Yeah, yeah. It's like complete abstinence
zero
from nicotine or,
yeah,
or you smoke.
Yeah.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that it's been 5 years. And there's a part of me that can't understand the addiction. Like, because I've done...
Because you don't have it, right?
Well, I've been there. Mm-hmm. I haven't, but like even when I did coke, I never got to the point where I was like, I need this.
Right.
It was more, I just like doing it. You know, it wasn't like I woke up going, I need a taste or anything like that. I never got to I never got to that point. And I've never got to a point with that, with anything. I think the closest has been marijuana. And it was only because now I live in California, I have a medical marijuana license. I have it so much, so I'm just kind of like, hey, I'm going to get stoned and watch a movie or something. Right. You know,
I'm addicted to pot.
Yeah, you're definitely addicted to it.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me when I see like these guys that have quit everything, like I almost want to be like, oh, dude, you can just do marijuana.
Yeah, you want
to
reason
with
it,
right? I want to say that, but then I'm like, dude, I don't understand it. I can't even imagine, you know, just having that devil in you or whatever the fuck it is, you know?
But, yeah, the devil. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to me to know that, like, because I know, like, weed is harmless, dude. Like, that's a great drug.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's so much fun, and it feels so good to smoke. And, like, I like smoking. I mean, eating it's like whatever. I've eaten it before, but I like smoking weed, man.
Yeah,
it's
fun to do it with people too. It's social.
Rolling a joint. We're gonna relapse here right now.
No.
Mac ODs on the show.
we're at the court in Vegas. Remember that time in Vegas, Brian? Well, you were there, right? That humongous show where Doug Benson showed up.
Huh?
Were you there in that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then Renazzisi had pot, but he didn't know how to roll a joint, so he gave it to Court, who's in the program for you know, a decade or two, and he goes, "Hey, are you allowed to?" Help me roll a joint. I'm sorry. And Court's like, yeah, I'm allowed to do that. And he was like, and he just rolls it right up. It's like, God, he's good at that.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved rolling joints, man. But, you know, like, the problem is, like, I've done it enough to know the thing, like, I keep saying is, like, the lines will start to blur. And that's what I'm afraid of, dude. Like, I'm afraid of, like, ever going back to that place again. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, well, especially when it's been 5 years. Might as well don't fuck that
up. There's a power to a streak. Yeah. If you got a streak going, there's a power to that where you're like, I need to protect this streak. Otherwise, I got to start over.
Yep.
Carl LeBeau told me that once. We were doing a gig in San Diego once, and I had a beer before. It was like Moondoggies. And he's like, oh, you can have a beer before? I was like, yeah, I like a beer. He goes, I wish I could have a beer. I'm like, why can't you? He goes, it would have to be a 12-pack. There's no a beer.
Yeah. Alcohol to me though seems like the most, like, I wish I could quit that. Like, it's not like I'm not addicted, but I like to drink, you know. But I don't wake up thinking I need to drink. Like, you know, some people wake up at noon and go like, oh, I want a beer.
Right.
I can't do that.
I've just become comfortable with like, nah, I'm not a boozer. Go ahead. I'm not drinking tonight. But you guys want to, go ahead, I'll be high over here.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much I didn't realize how much I liked it till that this last time, like 5 years ago, where I was just like, I love alcohol.
It's the social drug too.
Oh man, you know, and but the problem is I become a fucking slobbering pig. I just become a pig.
Yeah, people always end up saying that thing where it's like, why can't you just control yourself or just do it lightly? And it's like, you don't understand.
Yeah, it's not fun.
I cannot do that. I cannot just have a drink.
I don't control myself. I don't.
Yeah.
Why don't you? I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, and at some point, those people will probably eventually understand, oh, I can see how it get out of control now. Man. Oh, you have any stories before we get out of here? Any crazy things you've done that would seem of interest?
I don't know, man. Nothing super, super crazy. We talked about some stuff. I don't know. I haven't really thought about
it. Did you ever rape anybody? when you were jacked up or almost?
I have someone who says I did, but there I say go. I didn't. They say that it was a girl that I liked that liked me. Yeah. And I was supposed to come down and meet her for, I can't believe I'm talking about this. I was supposed to meet her for Halloween.
Yeah.
And I was living in Houston. She was back in Austin because I was going back and forth. And I said, I mean, the idea was going to go there and have sex with her. And that's the idea, I thought, right?
Yeah.
And she had a sign up on her door, the front door. And it said, come inside. I'm in there in my room. And I go in there and she's like sleeping naked. Oh, because nice. She's drunk. And I wake her up and I just start having sex with her. Now, to me.
Yeah.
I thought it was understood, but at the same time, it's like she was drunk and I was drunk.
There is a law in a lot of states that if they're drunk, it's rape.
So
Maybe I just admitted to rape.
I have no idea.
If that's the case, I think every guy is raped then.
There was a law in Massachusetts where if you were both drunk,
yeah,
it was rape. On your part, I mean,
we had planned to meet, but afterwards, you know, later on down the line, she's like, you really just took advantage of me. And I was like,
that's what it is. You took advantage. Yeah, you seduced her past her will.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, okay. I mean, now looking back on it, I mean, I was like young then. I was like, that's not the right way to do anything.
But she wasn't like fighting you off or anything.
No.
My friend had this once where he's having sex with a girl and she sobered up during the sex.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, hey, I want you to stop now. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And he goes, oh. Can I just finish? Yeah. And she was like, yeah, go ahead, hurry up. And so we did. Well, yeah. But it was like, okay, I'll stop if you want me to, but this is going to be really uncomfortable for me right now. Unless we can just finish this off.
So now do you right now, I know you're doing comedy again, but are you working full time now? Or are you not on the streets anymore, are you?
No. I'm living with I live actually with Rick Shapiro.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's craziness.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Now that's
and he's done with all that stuff too, or no?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thinks he's using all the time.
Yeah, but he's not.
And I'm like, I think he's just burned out from before.
No. Yeah, actually, I talked to somebody the other day, and they're like, dude, he's fucked up. He definitely is fucked.
He's
up.
He's not. And I'm telling you, he's not. I live with the guy. He's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, I'm making more money than I ever have, but I'm still not making enough to say I'm making a living doing comedy. But that is all I'm doing is comedy right now.
Well, it's good that you're focusing on that.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, I feel like I'm hoping in this year I'm going to be able to be at the point where it's like, all right, I'm making
livable money.
That's the one humongous step.
There's superstardom after that, but it's like, if you can just make a living just doing what your art, that's pretty great. All right. Well, That's the end of our skeptic tank about
that was badass.
Degenerate drug addiction.
That was fun.
My parents would hate you. They're so conservative. They would be like, don't talk to that boy. Do you have any gigs to promote or anything?
Yeah. April 23rd at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, Mac Lindsay's Darkest Hour. It's going to be 10:30 to midnight.
You're doing the whole Belly Room show?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. If you guys haven't seen Mac Lindsay, he really does take it to like a different type of level. You kind of have to let go of some of your predispositions, I guess, or you're just don't get offended, but you're not offensive, you just kind of like go for it sometimes.
Yeah,
very funny stuff. I love it, but it's kind of like, I guess you've been compared to like Bill Hicks and Stanhope.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't really like, I don't like
those comparisons either, but
I don't know, it's just I just have my thing. If you like what I do, you can go to MacLindsay.wordpress.com and check out videos there.
You gotta see it live. So April 23rd in the Belly Room,
yeah.
At 10:30. How much are tickets?
It's $10.
That's not much.
Yeah, it's not much.
Follow him on Twitter, too. It's MacLindsay3.
Yes, MacLindsay3.
And he has the coolest Sacred Cow tattoo right on his hand. A lot of our listeners are actually Cow.
Let me see it.
Sacred Cow fans.
SCP?
That's pretty badass. Yeah.
Sacred Cow Productions?
Yep.
Oh. I, Ari Shaffir, will be in at the Comedy Stop in Scottsdale, Arizona at the end of April. Last weekend. The first day of May, and then I'll be in Crackers in Indianapolis the last week of May, and somewhere else. Oh, Central Washington, but I forgot where. I don't know yet. First week of May. Anyway. Oh, and my storyteller show, April 13th.
Where is that?
It's going to be at the Improv this time. It's all hooker stories.
I want to go see that, man.
I think Norton's going to do it, but I'm not sure. But it's going to be Bobby Lee and Mike Black and Pepitone and Jimmy Dore.
And is that storyteller show is yours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to come check that out, dude.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. I try to reserve a bunch of seats for comics, so that, you know. Anyway. And find us all on Twitter, Redband too.
Yeah, Redband follows on
Redband as well.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. Skeptic Tank is under the Death Squad podcast. Just search the iTunes store under Death Squad. Subscribe to us.
Subscribe so you can listen to all of them.
That's right.
All right.
All right. Thank you guys very much. Thanks, Mac.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. All right.
That was cool.